This is a follow-up sermon to one that I gave, I believe, sometime in January, where I did one on the Middle East and prophecy and talked about the King of the South. So what I wanted to do, I had several people come up and say, well, you have to do one on the King of the North or it's unbalanced. And I thought, well, maybe that'd be a good thing to do. So even though in a lot of ways this is more like a Bible study, I wanted to be able to talk through this. For a number of you that have been in the church for a long time, a lot of this will be review. However, I would imagine it's been a long time since you've looked at a lot of this information. And there are other people that have not ever gone through this. Some of you young people that are in the audience that can be watching this as well. Some very exciting stuff here. If you like this sort of thing, I hope that it will catch your fancy as it did me. Again, last time we covered the King of the South, and I started with a scripture, and I want to start with that same scripture today. This is in Daniel 11, verse 40. And just reading this single scripture, which I've got up here on the screen, it says, at the time of the end, or as the return of Christ is about to come, the King of the South will attack him. Who's that him? We're going to find out. It's the King of the North. And the King of the North will come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he will enter the... My eyes are making it hard to see. Let me make this just a little bit bigger on my end here. Much better. And he will come with chariots and horsemen and with many ships. And he will enter the countries and overwhelm them and pass through. Last time we talked about the King of the South. We went through Ishmael and Esau and the various people that make up these areas that we know as the Middle East now. And we talked about what it was going to be as we would come down toward the end of the age. And a particular picture of some leaders in Europe. I'll show that toward the end. When we look at that, we look at the fact that there is this conglomerate of people in the South that are starting, early stages, but starting to organize. I actually had one pastor call me just last week, and he said, I don't know if you're paying attention to this like I am, but there's a lot of stuff going on. I said, yeah. I obviously am. So he says, I don't want to get everybody nervous and upset at church, but I'm really starting to wonder if this is coming together. So if nothing else, even if this ends up kind of fading away in a little while, I think it's good for us to be able to restudy this. Today, I want to go through the second part of this and talk about who is the King of the North that's going to come and fight this. We know that there's going to be a conglomerate of Arab states in the South that will probably be under a single leader. At some point in time, somebody's got to stand up and say, no, we need to get this all together. But who is the King of the North? If you turn with me to Daniel chapter 10, I want to read just a single verse here. Daniel chapter 10. And I want to read verse 14. Because this gives you an idea of the setting for this prophecy that we're going to be reading about today. This is an angel talking to Daniel. Daniel had seen a dream, had seen a vision, and we'll talk about those in just a little while. And he started asking questions of the angel because he'd started seeing a lot of things and he was really struggling. If you ever read through this, Daniel was absolutely perplexed and I think a little irritated that he was given some visions, he was given a little bit of explanation, but he kept going back to the angel and badgering him. What's this mean? What's this mean? And finally the angel said, look, dude, that's it. I'm not giving you any more. So at this point in time, Daniel is asking, and he says, this is the angel now talking to Daniel in verse 14, says, now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people. That's a key phrase to understand this. What will happen to your people in the latter days? For the vision refers to many days yet to come. So Daniel was given a vision, and he was trying to figure out, okay, so is this going to happen next week, next month, next year? And the angel came back and said, this is for a long, long time into the future. But this is what's going to happen to who? To your people. Who were Daniel's people? The Jews. Israel had already gone into captivity. We're not talking about what's going to happen to Israel. These prophecies that I talk about today are going to be specifically related to the Jewish people. And if you think of the land of Israel as the hub, think of Jerusalem as the hub. Anytime in these prophecies where it talks about north, south, east, west, it is in reference to the Jewish people who will be in their land at the end time. The Jews, since 1948, have been back in Palestine, and a lot of these end-time prophecies we're going to study are all about what's going to happen to that specific section of land. So let's now try and understand a little bit more about this. So the setting is obvious. We know that it's the end time. And this end time battle that's going to happen is going to happen between two great superpowers. But understanding who comprises the King of the North is a bit more complicated. He doesn't come right out and say, oh, it's going to be Germany and Italy and this and that. He doesn't say that. So what we have to do is we have to kind of look at what available information we have, and then from there we will be able to give a much more thorough understanding of what it is that's going to comprise this last king. So where did this kingdom get its start, and what was passed down through time to this final king? So what I want to do, I want to start in Daniel chapter 2. Again, for a lot of you, this will be review. This may have even been something that I think we used to teach these in some of the youth Bible lessons to be able to go through and understand this. I do want to say something right at the start for those children who may be in here. There are going to be a lot of pictures that I'm going to show here that may look scary. It's not intended to be scary. It's not the point. The point is, God gave these visions for people to be able to understand what was going to happen. So as you look at these, instead of looking at these and being afraid of them, I think I would just hope that you look at them and see them for what they're intended to be. This is God trying to help us to understand what's going to happen in the end time. So here's the first image. You probably remember this. This is the image in Daniel chapter 2 of what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. So let's start in Daniel chapter 2, and let's look in verse 1. We'll start understanding this even from the perspective and history of dates, etc. Daniel chapter 2 and verse 1. Now in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, and his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him. Have you ever had a dream that was so absolutely numbing to you that you got up and you thought about it all day long? How many of you remember your dreams? I do. How many of you don't? There are just as many people. So, yeah, my wife, she'll get up and I'll say, what'd you dream about last night? Well, I don't know. And I can tell you who was in them, what happened. I mean, all the crazy things where scenes change, where they're not supposed to. All of a sudden I'm in school and then I'm at church and then I'm somewhere else and there's no reason for them. I jump all over the place. Nebuchadnezzar's dream was so severe that he lost sleep, and he didn't sleep for several days. So verse 2, then the king gave the command to call all the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to tell the king his dream. So they came and stood before the king. He wanted to know what this meant. So being a kind of a religious guy, he thought, well, I'll just bring in all of my soothsayers and astrologers and people that can read tea leaves and all of that, and I'll ask them. This is not a person of God. This is the Babylonian king. Verse 3, and the king said to them, I had a dream, and my spirit is anxious to know what it means. So then the Chaldeans said, well, just tell us what the dream is, and we'll interpret it for you. But this king was a little smarter than that. I think he realized, you know, if I tell him the dream, they'll just make something up. So he said, I'm not going to tell you. You tell me what I dreamt and the interpretation, and then I'll know that you really know what's going on. Well, that obviously didn't help the soothsayers and astrologers any, because none of the wise men could tell him what the dream was made of. And so, what did the king do? He ordered them all to be killed. So, all of these astrologers and soothsayers that can't tell Nebuchadnezzar what it was that was his dream was about, they now have the captain of the guard that's going to go out. And if you look at verse 13, so the decree went out, and they began killing all of the wise men. And they sought for Daniel and his companions, because from King Nebuchadnezzar's point of view, Daniel was one of those wise men. He was somebody that was in the court of the king. He wasn't there when this whole dream thing happened. It's not that he was there all the time. But something happened to where Daniel decided that he needed to try and get involved with this, because the captain of the guard, his name is Arioch, had come to his house with his sword drawn. And he said, sorry, Daniel, but you're going to die today. So Daniel then does the very wise thing. Look at verse 14. It says, then with counsel and wisdom, Daniel talked to Arioch. So he kind of slowed him down a little bit and said, listen, the captain of the king's guard who had come out to kill all the wise men of Babylon, and he answered and said to Arioch, the king's captain, why is this decree from the king so urgent? I haven't heard anything about this, and I'm supposedly one of the wise. If you're going to come and kill me, shouldn't I have a chance to answer this riddle? Why is this decree from the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. So Arioch gave the background as to what was going on. Well, the king had a dream, and none of the wise men could tell him what the dream was. And he wouldn't tell him what the dream was. He's making them tell him what the dream was. So verse 16, Daniel went in and he asked the king to give him time that he might tell the king his interpretation. I want you to notice something interesting he did here. And I think this is perhaps a point that we can learn from this. If you really have something serious going on in your life, what do you do? Look at what happens in verse 17. Then Daniel went into his house, and what did he do? Did he close his door and pray by himself? No, look what he did. He made the decision known to Hananiah, to Mishael, and to Azariah, his companions. If you've got a serious problem going on in your life and you need prayer from people, let people know. You keep it to yourself, you're the only one going before the throne of God. God likes to hear prayers come up to him. Remember when I gave the sermon where I talked about all those voices from all over the world that this composer put together, and it was this great choir of voices. God is moved by that. So that's what Daniel did. Daniel and his buddies went into their rooms, and they knelt down and they started praying to God. Verse 18, that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men. So that's what happened. Daniel goes before God, and God then answers that. Verse 19, the secret was revealed to Daniel in a night vision. So Daniel blessed the God of heaven. So Daniel then is going to now go back before the king, which God had revealed to them, and help the king to understand it. I want you to notice something else about Daniel's character. You drop down to verse 24. Daniel tells Arioch, I know what the dream is. Go tell the king. So they set a time up for him to talk to the king. Verse 26, the king answered Daniel, whose name, according to Nebuchadnezzar, who changed Daniel's name to Belteshazzar, it's a tough one, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? Very specifically, what did the king say? Are you able to answer this question? None of my other wise men could, but can you? Daniel could have taken all the credit right here. Or he could have taken part of the credit. Well, God revealed it to me, but I'm so important that he revealed it to me. No, you're going to see Daniel is very humble about this. Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king has commanded, that the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, and the soothsayers cannot declare to the king. But there is a God in heaven who reveals secrets, and he has made known to you. Daniel took himself out of the picture. Isn't that interesting? God is going to make you know. Totally takes himself out of the picture here. What will be in the latter days? Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. And then he goes to describe what it was that was in the dream. Let's drop down to verse 31. And as you're listening, you can be reading along with me, or you can just be looking up at the image, because this is what Nebuchadnezzar saw. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. You ever wonder in chapter... I'm going to divert here for a minute. Ever wonder in chapter 3 why Nebuchadnezzar built a great image and then had people bow down to it? Sometimes you don't put chapter 2 and chapter 3 together. He's been given a dream of a great image. And after Daniel explains it to him, what does he go out and do? He goes out and builds a great image. I think he built what he saw in a dream. Sometimes you don't think about what chapter 3 is all about. But remember when Daniel had to bow down to that and he wouldn't do it, and they threw him in the fiery furnace? I think these are all connected. You, O king, were watching, and behold, a great image. And this great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. The image's head was of fine gold, its chest and its arms were of silver, its belly and thighs were of bronze, and its legs were of iron, and its feet part of iron and part of clay. So if you look at this picture, and let me get that bottom thing off of the... There. A little hard to see just because of the light and all of that, but you've got a head of gold, you've got the arms and chest of silver, you've got the thigh of bronze, and then you've got the feet of the legs of iron, and then by the time you get to the feet, there's iron mixed with clay. You can kind of see that. You can tell that there's a little different color down there at the bottom. So now Nebuchadnezzar knows, okay, Daniel's got the right... If he's got this, he's going to have the interpretation, because nobody else could even tell him what was being said. So now we've got this very scary dream that Nebuchadnezzar now realizes someone's going to finally explain to me what this is about. Verse 35, then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and all of the gold... Verse 35... And you watched while a stone was cut without hands, which struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. And the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, the gold, it all came crumbling down and were crushed together and became like chaff from the summer threshing winds. And the wind carried them away so that no trace was found. Whatever this image was, it was going to be completely destroyed by a stone cut without hands. And the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. So the interpretation now is going to be given to Nebuchadnezzar on what this statue meant. Verse 36, this is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation before the king. You can imagine Nebuchadnezzar, he's probably on the front of his throne. He finally realizes someone really does know what I dreamt about. Can you imagine being able to do that? And Daniel is now before the throne of the most powerful ruler on the planet at the time. This is King Nebuchadnezzar. We're going to talk more about what that kingdom was like in just a little while. Verse 37, you, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you kingdom, power, strength, and glory. And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beasts of the field and the birds of heaven, he has given them into your hand, and he has made you ruler over them all. You are this head of gold. So again, just looking at this image here, Daniel is telling Nebuchadnezzar, you are the top of this statue. Your kingdom and your physical life, you are this head of gold. Then Daniel goes on to describe it. He says, but after you will arise another kingdom. So this is now giving a timeline. It's going to start with you, but someone's going to come along after you. So after your kingdom disintegrates, as it were, another kingdom will come, but will be inferior to you. So the first was gold. The second is silver, meaning that silver is not as precious as gold. And on, bronze is not as precious as silver. Iron is not as precious as bronze. So the metals are getting stronger as they go down, but they're getting weaker in their value. So what we're going to see is God actually used Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar repented in a couple of cases. He had some character to him. By the time we get down to the final empire that's going to be as strong as iron, there's going to be very little character involved. And you're going to see how characterless the final people are going to be that represent this statue. After you, verse 39 again, will arise another kingdom inferior to yours, and then another, a third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over all the earth. So there's a succession here. Verse 40, and the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything like iron that crushes, and that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all of the others. Now let's go down to the very bottom here where you've got the toes. And where you saw the feet of toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, by that time, by the time we get all the way down to the end, the kingdom will be partly strong and partly fragile. And as you saw iron mixed with clay, they will mingle with the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed, and the kingdom will not be left to other people. It will break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms and stand forever. So this rock that you saw that's come down, it's going to land at the feet, because at the time that this power comes back to take over, this is going to be at the very end of four successive kingdoms. And right at the very end, God is going to come back and he's going to destroy everything that this image represents. All of the world's governments are going to go away, and God is going to come back and he's going to take over. So Nebuchadnezzar was given a view of what was going to happen. So if we look again at what we see here, we see that God has now revealed that there are four empires that are going to come, and he's identified the first one as the Babylonian, or sometimes you hear it as the Chaldean Empire. There were several groups of people that made up this. There's Assyrians, Babylonians, Chaldeans, many, many others that kind of make this conglomerate of this first world empire. The timing of this was around 625 to 539 B.C. I say B.C.E., they started doing that now, before the Common Era instead of before Christ, because people don't believe in Christ anymore, so you start seeing B.C.E. Even though 0 A.D. was not the birth of Christ. I think we think that Christ was born in 4 B.C., but anyway. He was born 4 years before he was born, which doesn't make any sense. Anyway, this first empire was going to be the Babylonian or Chaldean Empire, and it was from 625 to 539. But he says also in this, someone's going to come after you, someone's going to come after him, someone's going to come after him, and then this last one is this long legs, and this is going to go on for a long time, and by the time he gets to the very bottom, it's not going to be structurally sound anymore, and God's going to come back and he's going to destroy it, and every world empire is going to come to a crushing end, and then God is going to take over. So that is what was given to Daniel. So Daniel now is telling the king, you are the head of gold. So again, the very next chapter, what does he do? He goes to build an image, all of gold. Well, if I'm the head of gold, I'm going to build this image that I saw in my dreams, and I'm going to make this wonderful thing, and everyone's going to get to bow down to me. Anyway, I think that we all know that didn't go so well. All right, so that's Daniel chapter 2. So we're given a little bit of information here, and we'll come back and forth to this, but I want to start piecing things together. And I did this like I did so that you can... What I'm trying to do with this is pictures. I think in pictures anyway. So if you don't think in pictures, I've got something for you at the end that's more words and kind of Excel-oriented. But if you're a picture person like I am, then this hopefully will make more sense. So this is what Nebuchadnezzar sees. He sees four world empires that's going to start with him, but he also is basically told the Babylonian Empire is going to come to a close and someone's going to come and take over after you. All right, now let's go to the next one. This is Daniel chapter 7. So let's start piecing things together here. So go with me if you want to follow along in the Bible in Daniel chapter 7. And let's notice what it says here. In verse 1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions while on his head, and he wrote down the dream, telling the main facts. This isn't Belshazzar that has it. This is Daniel. God is giving Daniel some additional information. Belshazzar, just to give you an idea, Nebuchadnezzar was born around 604 B.C. and came to the throne when he was 24, 25 years old. Actually, that's not true. He's probably 21 or 22 years old. This is after Nebuchadnezzar has died. There were four or five leaders of the Babylonian Empire. We talk about Nebuchadnezzar, who was toward the front. This is now Belshazzar. So this is around 555 to 556 B.C. So this is a long time ago, and the Babylonian Empire has been going on for quite a while now. So Nebuchadnezzar's dream to Daniel that we talked about in chapter 2 is 50 years difference from this. So Nebuchadnezzar's dream was 50 years before. 50 years later, Daniel gets another dream. Sometimes we read these things and we see them back to back like, well, God gave a dream to Nebuchadnezzar and then Daniel went home that night and had another dream. No, that's 50 years have separated this. Daniel has been chewing on this for a long time. I just would have to imagine that Daniel not only was chewing on this, but he kept going in his prayers going, what does this mean? What does this mean? What does this mean? Because you're going to see Daniel, that's the personality that he was. He's always wanting to know what was going on. All right, so now let's look, and I'll put the pictures up here as we read through this. So, verse 2, Daniel spoke, saying, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, there were four winds of heaven that stirred up the great sea. And four great beasts came up out of the sea, each different from the other. You might recognize these pictures. These come from some of our old booklets back in Worldwide days. Sometimes an old comfortable shoe is fun to see. There are lots of other drawings and lots of other pictures out there for more contemporary artists. And I've got some contemporary ones, but I wanted to go back and show some of the old ones too, just because I thought they were so good. It says in verse 4, the first beast was like a lion, and it had eagle's wings. And I watched until its wings were plucked off, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. And a man's heart was given to it. So we know again from what was revealed in Daniel chapter 2 that this would refer to Nebuchadnezzar. Why a lion? We're going to see that in a minute. We'll get there. Why wings, and why did the wings get plucked off? You remember what happened to Nebuchadnezzar when he thought, I'm so great? What did God do? He plucked his glory away and he made him eat straw for 7 years like a wild animal. But when he finally set him back up, he set him up with the heart of a man. And Nebuchadnezzar, toward the end of this period of time in his life, came to appreciate the true God. Don't know that he was converted. I wouldn't hasten to say that, but we know that he did a lot of great things for Daniel, for the Jewish people, and that he did see a lot of things. So we see that this first one was like a lion. Why does he call him a lion? We'll go through that in just a moment. Verse 5, and suddenly another beast, a second, came like a bear. Notice what it says about it. It was raised up on one side, and it had 3 ribs in its mouth between its teeth. I want you to notice all these symbolisms because we'll start tying this all together as we go through this. So why was it a bear? Why was it raised up on one side, and why did it have 3 ribs in its mouth? And they said, thus to it, arise and devour much flesh. So whatever was going to come after Nebuchadnezzar's reign, doesn't say who it's going to be here, but some very strong animal like a bear, some kingdom that's going to have the power of a bear is going to come, is going to knock off the Babylonian or Chaldean Empire. And after this, verse 6, I looked, and there was another, like a leopard. And the leopard had on its back 4 wings of a bird, and this beast had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. So you can see the picture of, should make these bigger for people to be able to see, but you've got a leopard that has 4 heads. Have you ever seen an animal that had more than one head? I've seen turtles with 2 heads. Don't know if you've ever seen, there are some animals that come out. This animal is a leopard, but it has 4 heads. So what does that symbolize? We're going to see as we go through this. Verse 7, and after I saw in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, and it was dreadful and terrible. He couldn't even describe what it was. He had never seen anything like it before. So he could tell a lion, a bear, and a leopard because he had seen them. But yet, whatever this 4th beast was, he hadn't seen. So he just calls it a beast, dreadful and terrible, exceeding strong. It had huge iron teeth, and you can kind of see that in this picture here. And it was devouring and breaking in pieces and trampling the residue with its feet. And it was different from all of the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. So now we get another little key here. On the head of this beast are 10 horns. I have never seen an animal with 10 horns. I've seen one with 4. I was thinking about this the other day. You know, what have I seen? I've seen some animals, some kind of crazy looking animals with 4 horns. But I've never seen one with 10. So in this dream we have a lion, a bear with 3 ribs in its mouth, raised up on one side, a leopard with 4 heads, and a dreadful beast that has iron teeth. Now, if you want to just make the first comparison here, this beast is the 4th, and it has iron teeth. If you go across to Nebuchadnezzar's image, what were the legs made of? They were made of iron. So we're going to start seeing some parallels that can go back and forth between these as we go through. You'll see why God uses these analogies. Verse 15, and I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit. That happened to him a lot. God would reveal things to him and then not give him the full story until Daniel begged and pleaded. So Daniel's going back and he was grieved within his body, and the visions of his head troubled him. And I came near to one of those, he's in this vision again, or in this dream, he came near to one of those that stood by, probably an angel, and asked him the truth of all of this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. The 4 great beasts which you saw, are 4 kings which will arise out of the earth. So each one of these represents a king or a kingdom. Those words can be synonymous or interchanging. There are 4 kings or 4 kingdoms that will come out of the earth. But at the end it says the saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom and possess it forever and ever. And verse 19, I wished to know the truth about the 4th beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with iron teeth and the nails of bronze, which devoured and broke in pieces and trampled the residue with its feet and the 10 horns that were on its head. I want to stop there, and we'll go through more of this as we go along. But let's go back. Now, we don't have the beast identified yet. So if I look back at this again, we still know that there is the Babylonian Empire. We know that another one is going to come after this. It's silver in Daniel's dream, and it's a bear with three ribs in its teeth and raised up on one side. We know there's a third world empire that's going to have four heads and be a leopard, and then a fourth. And Daniel starts looking down here. I think as he looked through this, he thought, well, this one at the end is the most interesting, so he starts asking questions. I think the angel is going to stop him and back him up and start to explain some more things. So the last three kings aren't identified yet, and we will talk about who they are in just a moment. But I wanted to be able to show you, let's start with the first one since it's already been identified. Why did God use the symbol of a lion to represent the Babylonian Empire? I'll show you a picture here. You may have seen this before. I'm glad that there are pictures taken because ISIS right now is going through a lot of these cities and destroying, like ancient Kirkuk and many of the cities that were in the Chaldean or Babylonian Empire. Because they see them as idols, they're destroying them. This is, and you can read from Expositor's Bible Commentary, the lion was the symbol and the characteristic of Babylon. So you look up at the top there, the lion with the wings, that God knew that specifically would help identify which that first kingdom was. The gate entrance was adorned especially in Nebuchadnezzar's time, when the Ishtar gate entrance was adorned on either side with a long procession of yellow lions on blue-grazed brick. There were lots of these around the city gates. You could see all these lions. Nebuchadnezzar saw himself as this king lion, fashioned on relief. Again, that's from the Expositor's Bible. So, from the perspective of why would God choose a lion, that made perfect sense. A lion is not only the symbol that Nebuchadnezzar used of himself, but a lion is a strong beast, something that would show what the kingdom would be like. Just to give you a map and a couple things to point out on this. So this, at the top of the Babylonian Empire, which would again have been in the 600s to 500s B.C., this is the area that they took over. And if you look and see where this is Jerusalem, this is Egypt, this is the area of Saudi Arabia. We've got a little bit of Turkey, not all of it, that's going to be important. We've got Syria, we've got a part of Iraq, but we don't have the areas that are further out. See who's out here? Media, a little further out is Persia. This area is not a part of the Babylonian kingdom. And you're also going to see that it doesn't extend out here. So it doesn't have Turkey, it doesn't have Greece, it doesn't have areas in Europe. It was limited, but at the time, it was the most important world empire. Again, why does Daniel start with this one? There was another empire before this. What was the one right before this? The Assyrians. Why doesn't there five world empires and start with the Assyrians? Remember what the angel told Daniel. I'm going to give you a vision of what will happen to your people from now to the end of time. The Assyrians had nothing to do with what was going on with Judah. The Assyrians took Israel out of the way. But this, I think that this is specifically talking about what's going to happen to the Jewish people. So notice that Media is further east, as well as Persia, and Greece is further west. So let's go on. Let's go now to Daniel chapter 8, and let's add some more pictures to this. Daniel chapter 8, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Belshazzar, a vision appeared to me, Daniel, after the one appeared to me the first time. This is a couple of years later. So a couple of years have passed, and he's again now getting another vision. And I saw in the vision, and it happened while I was looking, that I was in Shushan, the citadel, which is in the province of Elam, and I saw a vision that was by the river Ulai. So I'm going to put a couple of pictures up here again of what he saw. I lifted my eyes, and I saw, and there standing beside the river was a ram. The ram had two horns, and one horn was higher than the other. So you've got a ram, you can kind of see that in the picture, that it's very small, but again, probably to do this again, I should make these bigger, but I wanted to kind of line them up where they belong. So we've got a ram with two horns, and one horn is higher than the other. And the higher one came up last. Verse 4, and I saw a ram, I saw the ram, and it pushed westward, northward, and southward. Think again, from Jerusalem, something from the east is going to push west, north, and south. We'll see that when I pull up a picture of what this empire looked like. So that no animal could withstand him, nor was there any that could deliver him from his hand, but he did according to his will, and he became great. So this ram is now pushing against all of the kingdoms of the world. Verse 5, and as I was considering, suddenly a male goat came from the west. So now someone's going to come from the west in relationship to Jerusalem, and he's going to push east. A male goat came from the west across the surface of the whole earth, so he would. This was a long ways away, and he was going to make to travel a long way without touching the ground. He was so fast. If I kind of jump ahead of the story, and you look across lion, bear, or leopard, which one is the fastest? Why would God use a leopard for this? This kingdom was fast, and you're going to see how fast he actually able was to destroy. Verse 7, I saw him confront the land. Now let's go back to verse 6. Sorry, I've lost my place here. Yes, verse 6. Verse 5. As I was considering, a male goat came from the west across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground, and the goat had one notable horn between his eyes. That's going to be important. Verse 6, then he came to the ram that had two horns, and while I was standing beside the river, he ran at him with furious power, and I saw him confronting the ram as he was moved with rage against him, and he attacked the ram, and he broke both horns. So whatever these horns represent, this single-horned male goat is going to destroy it. There was no power in the ram to withstand him, but he was cast to the ground and trampled, and no one could deliver the ram from his hand. Verse 8, then the male goat grew very big, but when he became strong, the large horn was broken, and in place of that large horn came four notable ones, and it came toward the four winds of heaven. So I've got a picture here again. You've got this first ram that's got two horns with one higher than the other. And then you've got a ram that comes along, or a he-goat that comes along, and it's got four horns. There actually are four-horned rams out there. I don't know if you've ever seen one. They're kind of ugly looking if you think about it, but they're there. So it starts out with one horn in the middle, but it ends up with four horns. What could this possibly mean? So Daniel again sees this dream, and there is an interpretation that God is going to give. Let's go down to verse 16 and read the interpretation. Then it happened, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and was seeking the meaning, that suddenly there stood before me one having the appearance of a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Ulai, who called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So finally, I think Daniel's going, good, I'm going to get an answer to all of these strange things that he's seeing. Verse 17, so he came near and stood, and when he came, I was afraid, and I fell on my face. But he said to me, understand, son of man, that the vision refers to the time of the end. I'm giving you this stuff now, but this is going to take a long time to happen, and it's going to go all the way to the time of the end. So as he was speaking to me, and I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground, he touched me and stood me upright. And he said, verse 19, I am making known to you what will happen in the latter time of the indignation, for that appointed time at the end shall be. The ram which you saw having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. So let's stop there and talk about that for a moment. Now we've identified the second kingdom. Why does it have a ram with two horns and the second horn is bigger? The ram which you saw having two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. So you have the Media came first, Persia came second, and Persia ended up being bigger than others. Even if you look at a lot of maps, not all of them, a lot of maps will have Persia in like 18 points where it will have Media in 14 points because Persia was a bigger deal. Persia and Media are the areas today that we would call Iran. So they were the ones that would come up afterwards. Verse 21, and the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. And the large horn that is between its eyes is its first king. So we'll talk about who that first king was. And as for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms will arise out of that nation, but not with power. So Greece will start out with one leader, and then when that leader dies, there'll be four people that will take his place. So who were those people? All right, let's start talking about the first one now. We know that it's Media and Persia. Here's a map. which gives you an idea. So here is ancient Babylon, is this area right here. You can see that this is a much bigger kingdom. And remember what it says about this two-horned, you see Media and Persia down here. What did it say that it did? It said it went west, north, and south. And that's exactly what they did. They came from the east, and they conquered everything to the west, north, and south, including Jerusalem. Remember, I'm going to tell you what will happen to your people. So this world, there are a lot of world empires that came and went. But the ones that affected Jerusalem and Judah are the ones that God's mentioning here. So you see them come and they take over. Now they've gone even further. They've gone into the area of modern-day Turkey. Thrace and Samaria is here. This is like modern-day Bulgaria. And coming down into Greece. They didn't get all the way into Greece, but they started knocking on the door. This is Constantinople or Istanbul, right in this area. Marlis and I spent some time there. And all the way down into Egypt. So, the map of Persia. Why did it say that it was a bear raised on one side? The two paws were Media and Persia, and one of the paws was raised on one side because Persia was bigger. Why does it say that it had three ribs in its mouth? When Persia finally decided that it was going to become a world-conquering empire, they had three other nations that were in its path, and it had to get rid of all three of them first. The first one was Lydia, which was up here. This was a growing empire. So the first one that they conquered was Lydia. The second one that they conquered was Babylon. And the third one that they conquered was Egypt. So that bear rose up with one paw higher because Persia was bigger than Media. And it took out all of the other world-ruling empires that were around there at the time. So it was a bear that had three teeth in its mouth. It took a while. A bear plods along. It is not fast. And it goes through and it talks about this probably took 40 or 50 years to be able to get this all done. But once Media had finally taken over, then they were the world-ruling power. At its height, it covered three continents. You can see that it's in Asia, it's in the Middle East, and it's in even making headway into Europe. I won't take the time to read this, but I'll just mention it. Isaiah 45, verses 1 through 4, actually mentions 150 years before the Medo-Persian Empire took over. It mentions who the first king would be by name. Remember it said that Cyrus would come and he would take over and do great things. Cyrus actually read that when he came to power and realized that the God of the Jews had predicted his name long before he had ever come to power. And that impressed him so much that he had a kind of a special place in his heart for the Jewish people. But he did take over and, again, conquer the area that we now know as Judah. Judah, of course, by this time, is still in Babylonian captivity. And you will see later on that because of this knowledge that a lot of the kings of this area even allowed them to go back into their own country and rebuild the walls of the temple, they really did take very good care of the Jews. So the first king we know is Cyrus. The fourth king, we'll see how good you are. This is a test. The fourth king was Xerxes the First. Who was his wife? His other name was Ahasuerus. Esther. So this is the kingdom where Queen Esther, if you went through with Ralph Levy and he went through the FI online where he went through the book of Esther, this is that period of time. The Babylonian Empire is gone. Daniel is actually still alive at the beginning of this. Probably by the time Daniel was given these dreams, he was just maybe 4 or 5 years away from dying, but he was given these dreams late in life. So this is the period of time where Queen Esther would have been helping save the Jewish people from the evil Haman. Our kids did a play on that back in Dallas when they were kids, and our son played Haman. I'm not sure what that means, but anyway, somehow it all fits, doesn't it? He would laugh if he were here. Okay, so but a new empire was rising in the west. Let's look at that. So here is the Greek Empire. And again, if you see where it came from, actually it was pretty impressive if you think about it. This is this tiny little island of Greece, and it's going to take over, and it's going to conquer much of the area and go all the way into where the Medes and the Persians were, and it's now going to take over. Remember, the Bible said that the he-goat came from the west, which is exactly right. Jerusalem is down here. He comes from the west, and he comes and conquers all of this area, and takes over Judea, takes over Jerusalem. So this is now the third world empire again that has taken over the land of Judah. The Greco-Macedonian Empire lasted from around 330 BC, and it took them 3 or 4 years to conquer all of Persia. If you think about that, again, that's why it has the body of a leopard. It was very fast. Where the bear took 20, 30, 40, 50 years to conquer his territory, the first king, the notable one, was Alexander the Great, and he conquered the entire thing in 3 years. Think about the fact that these people don't have cars, tanks, and jeeps. They're on horseback or camel. And he was able to conquer 1,200 to 1,500 miles of territory in 3 years. That's very impressive. He did it very fast. Not only was it a leopard, but it had a leopard with wings. And it even talks about that the he-goat, when it came, didn't even touch the ground. He was going so fast. Alexander was able to do this very, very quickly. Alexander the Great defeated all of this, but I'll read this in just a minute. He didn't last long, and he died. And then as a result of him dying, I've got another graphic up here, his kingdom was divided into four parts. So the he-goat starts out with one horn, Alexander the Great, but when he dies, then his kingdom gets divided up among four of his generals. Seleucus, and I'm probably saying that wrong, Seleucus, Ptolemy in Egypt. Seleucus is in an area that would basically be defined by Syria, since that's in this area and it's where most of the people were. Lysimachus took over what we would probably consider the area of Asia Minor and a little bit into the Greece area. And then we've got Cassander that took over the Greek peninsula and all the way up into Thrace. Thrace is kind of modern Bulgaria today, up in that area. So now we see that I've covered it up. There's a picture underneath this picture, but we've now got one horn that broke into four, and the Greek Empire is now into four areas. Cassander, Lysimachus, Seleucus Nicator, and Ptolemy Soter. Now I want to go to Daniel chapter 11. There are no pictures involved with this in Daniel 11, but I want to read through this because now we start, and it's why I went through this to get here, now we mention the king of the north, which is what we're wanting to get to. We want to know who this king of the north is going to be at the end. He starts to get introduced here in Daniel 11. Emma doesn't like the king of the north. It's okay, Emma. Daniel 11, 1 through 4. In the first year of Darius the Mede, so now we're into the Medo-Persian Empire that has taken over, and this is now Darius. This is Daniel again. I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. I now tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will arise in Persia. So Daniel is talking to Darius and saying, you're not going to be the last one. There's going to be three more after you're gone. There's going to be three. It's going to last for a while. But the fourth will be far richer than all, and by his strength, though he is rich, he shall stir up against all the realm of Greece. So if you remember the picture of the Medo-Persian Empire, it started heading toward the area of Greece, and they were knocking on the door, and that irritated the Greeks. So you're going to see the Greeks are going to take over here pretty soon. Verse 3, a mighty king will arise, this is Alexander, who will rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he has arisen, his kingdom will be broken up and divided toward the four winds of heaven. So when Alexander dies, his four generals take over. But not among his posterity, nor according to his dominion, for his kingdom will be uprooted for others besides these. So there's going to be a lot of problems with the Greek Empire. I want to read something again from Expositor's Bible Commentary. Even talking about what Expositor's Bible Commentary sees when it reads Daniel. It says, in 7 or 8 years, Alexander accomplished the most dazzling military conquest in all of human history. But he only lived for 4 more years after his conquering of the Medo-Persian Empire. For after one of his drunken bouts, so evidently he had a problem with alcohol, he died of a fever in 323 BC in the imperial capital of Babylon. So remember where he comes from. He comes from the area in Greece, and he dies all the way over in Babylon. He's right in the middle or in the heart of this new country that he's taken over in just a matter of years, in the imperial capital of Babylon. But verse 4 foretells the division of Alexander's domains among his four generals, which became smaller and much weaker. So again, we see that it's at the first part of Daniel 11 that it's the Medes and then the Greek Empire that are going to introduce this. But now in verse 5, something interesting says. So this is still, again, the Greek Empire that is divided into four. So the Greek Empire now, verse 5, says, "The king of the south will become strong, as well as one of his princes, and he will gain power over him and have dominion, and his dominion shall be a great dominion." So look at the map. Who's the king of the south? At this point in time, it's Egypt. We're still in the Greek Empire here, so the king of the south now, at this point in time, is Egypt. Verse 6, "And at the end of some years, they will join forces, for the daughter of the king of the south will go up to the king of the north to try and make an agreement." Who's the king of the north? We'll see what happens in history. But the king of the north, again, from Jerusalem, this north area up here, this is the Syrian empire of Seleucus. It goes all the way over into this area, but again, the main part of it is right here. So you've got the king of the south, which is Egypt, and the king of the north right now, which is the area in Syria. For the sake of time, I don't want to read all of this. There is an article if you are interested in it. But you can go from verse 5 to verse 34 and see the most amazing and detailed prophecy that's ever been given. As an example, it talks about that he will give, the king of the south will try and give his daughter to the king of the north. It's exactly what happened. Ptolemy said, "I want to get into a relationship with the rulers of the north." So they arranged a marriage. And then it says, but the marriage wouldn't last, and that she would end up betraying her father, and that's exactly what happened. Once she got married to the king of the north, she sided with him and helped plot against the king of the south. It goes through and talks about a ruler will come from the king of the north or the king of the south, I don't remember which, but he won't die in battle, he'll die of another cause. And history shows that one of his generals poisoned him. It is so specific, it is amazing. You can go down. And for the sake of time, again, I was going to go through all this, but for the sake of time, I won't. There's an article out there that goes through from verse 5 to verse 34 and mentions every detail in history exactly as it was prophesied 500-600 years before it happened, down to the detail of who was going to do what to whom. It's an amazing prophecy. Again, I encourage you to take the time to do it. So there's going to be an ebb and flow between these two powers, the king of the north and the king of the south. Let's drop down to verse 31, because this is going to go on so long, you're going to see something very interesting. Verse 31, "These forces will be mustered by him, and they will defile the sanctuary fortress." Where's the sanctuary fortress? It's in Jerusalem. "And they will take away the daily sacrifices, and they will place an abomination of desolation." Who's this talking about? We're going to see that this is really dual in prophecy, that something really did happen. While the Greek Empire was still in its power, one of its leaders came along by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes. You ever heard that word? What did Antiochus do? He got crossways with the Jews and decided that he was going to try and take out the seed of their religion. So what did he do? He took pig's blood and he took it into the temple, and he desecrated the Holy of Holies with pig's blood. He set up an idol in the temple to worship his gods. And so this daily sacrifices are stopped, and the abomination of desolations is put in place. This goes all the way down to this starts in the 300s. It goes all the way down to the 190s. This is the time of the Maccabees. Remember the Maccabean revolt and the whole reason why we have the Feast of Purim. Because the Maccabees revolted against this and eventually got the temple cleaned up again. Notice what happens. Let's go down to verse 35 because you're going to see some duality here. "Some of those of understanding will fall to refine them and to purify them and to make them white until the time of the end, for it is still at an appointed time." Even though there's this abomination of desolations, something like this is going to happen right at the very end. "The king will do according to his will. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god." That's certainly what Antiochus did. "He will speak blasphemies against the God of gods and will prosper till his wrath has been accomplished. He will neither regard God," verse 37, "of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard of any god, and he will exalt himself above others." So we see as we read through this that toward the end of the Greek Empire, when it was about to fall, one of its last leaders was Antiochus Epiphanes, and he caused a lot of problems for the Jewish people. So it looks to be that the king of the north and the king of the south are about to come to an end. I want you to think about it for a moment. There is, again, some dual interpretation of this. It clearly points to Antiochus and the Maccabean revolt. But if you remember what Christ said in Matthew 24, I'll just turn there. You don't have to turn there. Matthew 24, verse 15. I want to read a prophecy that Christ gave while he was on earth. It says, "When you will see the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet, know, standing in the holy place, then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, and those who are on the housetop go not and take anything out. Don't let him go back and get his clothes. Woe to the pregnant and the nursing in those days, that your flight may be not in the winter, for great tribulation, such as has not been since the world has come to this time, no nor ever shall be. To where if the days weren't shortened, no flesh would be saved alive." So we know, again, that this is what happened back in the days of Antiochus was a type, and it's going to happen again. Another event like this is going to occur. But we're back in the 190s BC, and the Greek Empire is coming to an end. So guess what? The king of the north and the king of the south are no longer events that are happening. Why not? Why does it stop here? There's a little speculation here. We've got, remember what the angel said to Daniel, "I'm going to tell you what's going to happen to your people." Guess what happens when the Greek Empire kind of dies out right here? A lot of the people that are in Jerusalem, a lot of the Jews, are taken out. And they are not going to be around for quite a while. They go through a period where there really isn't much of a Jewish nation because of a lot of the persecution from Antiochus and from others. So what we see here is, again, the king of the north and the king of the south really stop existing at this point in time. But notice something in verse 40. At the time of the end, the king of the south is going to attack the king of the north. So they've got to come back. There is a period of nearly 2,000 years where we don't have a king of the north or a king of the south. We don't have them right now. When you look at it, there is, you can see evidence of them starting to come together. You see a European conglomeration, you see an Arab conglomeration, but they're not there yet. And they haven't been for a long time. So again, if we look at this, we know that we have the Babylonian Empire, which you've seen up here. We've got the Medo-Persian Empire of the goat and the bear. We've got the Greek Empire of the four generals, the four-headed leopard, which represents, again, this belly and thighs of bronze. But who is this fourth world empire? Who is this fourth world empire? Let's go to Revelation chapter 13 and let's read about it. Revelation 13. Is it really 10 till 3? Okay. I'm in trouble. Wondering if I should stop there and do this another time. Let's take a vote. Who wants me to do a part two? Who wants me to stay and talk more? I figured it's half and half. Okay. Maybe I will stop here just for the sake of time. So this will be, we will continue on with this. I didn't realize this was going to take this long. Actually, I did. I was fooling myself. So anyway, we've got three empires that have been brought forth so far. We know that there's the Babylonian Empire. We know that there is the Medo-Persian Empire, and there is the Greek Empire. But there is a fourth one to come. And this fourth one, you know, is the two legs of iron, as you can see there. And all the way at the bottom is going to be the feet of iron and clay mixed. And right at the very last, there's going to be this king of the north and king of the south. Who are they going to be, and what are they going to do, and how will it end? So, again, I really did not think it was going to take this long to get there. And I know the clock is wrong, because there is no possibility that I was up here that long. But anyway, we will continue on with this next time. So let's go ahead and close, have a hymn and a prayer, and we can fellowship for a while.